Welcome, everybody, to the Power of Attorney podcast. This is our premiere episode. So we have, of course, myself, Ostradamus Toys. We've got Vintage Motu Bobby, and of course, if you're watching Joe Amato, it's Motu. Just deal with it. And
Hello, everyone.
then, of course, we've got, Adam from the Battle Ramp, like the historian of Masters of the Universe, I would say at this point, and what an honor it is to find myself recording a show with you, Adam. It's certainly a pleasure. So thanks, this is great.
Thank you, Oz. I'm happy to be here. I'm going to stumble my way through this. Because I'm not a podcast guy, but apparently I am now. So you guys just knock me over when I'm doing something wrong.
Oh, you won't be doing nothing wrong. This will be fantastic. You're here. You're part of the team. We're all a team together. This will be great. I'm looking forward
That's
to this
great.
one. Yeah, it's going to be a great show. We'll be doing it once a month, and it'll be airing the third Monday of every month, obviously. But yeah, we're going to be talking Eternia today. And what are your thoughts of that crowdfunding thing that Mattel put out today or this week or whatever? I know I'm stumbling my words. I apologize, but the crowdfunding, how did you think that went?
I mean, it seems like it was a pretty successful. They zoomed by the initial goals. What was it? Was it they were looking for 5,000 initially, which was right. That was the vintage playset that is. They made 5,000 of those, so they ended up with just over 9,000, which is almost twice how many vintage Eternia playsets they actually made. So I'd say that's pretty good, especially since this is all adult collectors. I assume not too many people are spending this kind of money for a playset for their kids. It seems like it was a pretty good success.
So I thought too. We didn't make it to Keklar with the 10 grand, but I didn't think it would in a way. I was really surprised it passed up to 8,000, to tell you the truth. That was pretty exciting how quickly they got to there once that Modi character came out. Fans went crazy for that for some reason. I didn't understand it at first, but I didn't know the appeal of it, and I didn't think people were going to grab onto it that fast. But they actually did, and they loved that stuff. And I know Oz, you were mentioning it, in prior that you love creatures, and we all love the creatures. But that was something
Right.
cool. And what were your thoughts on that, the Modi?
Oh man, it's one of those things, like there were so many odd details that they used to sculpt into these play sets, and so many different creatures and critters on the boxes everywhere, like in the background of the box art and all. And finally bringing some of that to life in a couple of different ways right now, because we've got Frogmonger coming out, we've got Modi with Eternia, they put those gargoyles in the Battlefield Warrior 2 pack. I think people, especially us fans, are excited to build out more of the world of He-Man than what was originally possible, or what they had originally figured would tool or sell. So getting like all these little neat extra things is kind of cool, and it kind of wraps back in with Keklar, where I could see where initially they would be skeptical about making such a deep cut character, but trying to put them out there and engage that fan demand, like, well, are they going to want deep cut characters like this? Now, I gotta say, it is a little disappointing that we all went crazy for Modi, and I'm happy. Don't get me wrong, because again, I love my critters, but not quite making it to Keklar. And it's like, well, he's actually a character. And then, like, if we had gotten Keklar, who else could we have seen, as potential in the future? I mean, the door's still wide open with something like Frogmonger coming out, but still, it's kind of like just that one less character that we're going to get in the line now that there was potential for. Kind of a bummer, but I'm still happy. Like, if we're getting Eternia, I mean, I had to back out. Unfortunately, I couldn't get out. I had too many responsibilities. But for everybody that did manage to get this, I know what a big deal that is. And that's incredible. And I'm so happy and so proud of the community for what they were able to achieve.
What did you think? I know the first tier was King Grayskull from Revelation. And then they were talking about, you know, offering that to everybody if they hit the 10K, everybody who backed, no matter if it was early backers or later backers. What did you think about sort of that as an incentive?
Well, I know I was okay with it because I was an early backer. But at the same time, I've said this before, Mattel needs to be careful on what they're promising early. I mean, it's still on their website saying early backer bonus. And let's get this pushed to 5,000, you know, to get King Grayskull. But now when they announced it, that everybody's going to get them, I was okay with it because I want fans to have it if they're purchasing it. I mean, it's a big purchase. Yeah. But at the same time, if they do another crowdfund, they need to be careful on what they're promising and then taking back and then offering to everybody or whatever, because no one's going to trust that anymore as a reason to go to it, because when I purchased it, I didn't have the payment plan. So I got charged once and made the 5,000. Now all of a sudden, everybody that after that first week, they can get payment plans to get it further. And I was kind of like, I was afraid to cancel it and then, or see if I can, you know, do the payment plan, but I would lose the figure, you know, a year and a half from now, I'm going to find out that I don't have them. I'm going to be mad, you know? I mean, it's a character that's not that important to me, but it's still money I'm spending to have the whole collection in a way. So I want to make sure I have it. So I didn't change the payments or nothing. So, but that's my feelings on it. But I'm glad if they, I don't think they announced anything of that they're going to give it anyway. So that's a good thing. At least they're keeping their promise with that. Yeah. So now it should only be the first 5,000 that gets King Grayskull.
I was a little surprised. I kind of halfway expected them to say, you know, as we hit that deadline, you know, you guys have knocked it out of the park. We're going to extend it another week to see if we can hit that 10,000, but they didn't, which is, I think they did something like that with the Classics Castle Grayskull pre-order. Like they extended it out a little bit even further than the original, which I thought, you know, I kind of expected that. I felt it was a missed opportunity. I'm sure they could have eked out, you know, I don't know if they would have made 10K, but they would have gotten more.
Yeah, I know there was a lot of people wondering if they were going to do that for the Eternia, but so I don't think they are. I haven't seen anything. It's been, what, almost a week now since it's closed. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I don't see that changing. So, but Adam, you came out with a new article not too recently about Eternia. If you want to expand on that a little bit, because that was pretty good with your interviews and stuff you had on there.
Yeah. So I purposely did that just timing wise. I'd been kind of dragging my feet on writing about Eternia because I've never owned it, and it's such a huge, complicated playset. You know, it's not like I have to, you know, look, you know, go look in the, you know, at the corner of my room and, you know, make sure I'm getting it. I have to do a lot of online research or look through the Pixel Dan book just to see what's make sure I'm getting it all. But there's some interesting backstory. So it was originally conceived as let's do Castle Grayskull Part 2 kind of thing. So Ted Mayer, who designed, he was one of the early designers. He designed things like the Battle Ram and Wind Raider, Talon Fighter, a few of the early vehicles. He was an engineer, so he was brought in a little bit later after Mark Taylor left Mattel. Roger Sweet was then in charge of the line. He brought Ted Mayer back into the line from Ted was working on some of the Mattel Intellivision products, like the early video games that they were trying to do. So he was charged with doing this, you know, Castle Grayskull Part 2. So, you know, it was originally called Mount Eternia. You did have sort of the three towers early on, and they played a lot with sort of, you know, is it a wolf theme in the middle, or, you know, what are the features? But early on, you did have a lot of, you know, vehicles, you know, on ramps, or, you know, the monorail kind of concept. One of the stories, though, that I've heard from two different Mattel people about when it was actually sculpted, you know, a couple of years after those initial designs. I heard this from directly from Martin Arriola, who is another Mattel designer, and then Ted Mayer did a podcast years ago where he talked about this too. So the guy who is sculpting the center tower is notoriously slow. He, you know, he was just taking forever with it. So basically the guys played a prank on him. So they thought, you know, he could have been done much earlier. So they basically mocked up a central tower prototype really quickly, like within a couple of hours, made it look close enough to the real one that, you know, it could pass muster. And then basically they just knocked it to the floor. So it was, you know, it was all broken and smashed on the floor. And then they hid the real one away. Right. So when the guy came in, he was freaking out, just, you know, thinking that his, you know, weeks or months work had just been wasted.
I could imagine that's yeah, rough. Really, yeah, rough.
I don't know the guy's name. Who actually sculpted it. I do know that he did some of the dinosaur figures that came out in 87, like Bionatops. I think he did that. But I haven't tracked down the guy's name, though.
So with the original Eternia, what did you see the live stream on all the play features and everything that Mattel did?
Yeah, I saw. I didn't get to see the whole thing, but I kind of zipped through it. I saw with the Viper Tower, you can kind of make the Viper strike at the train as it goes by. I saw that. Wasn't there something they did with the Grayskull Tower that they changed a little bit? I don't remember.
I think there's the rear base, right, Oz, that has like another cage or something. I believe.
Yes. So like the jail cell for the bottom, like, it's larger now. Of course, like, the whole play set's slightly larger than it was before. And you've got, like, the back hatch opens up. There's a trap door they can fall into, as well as the front gate. So it's, like, multiple points of entry or points of escape, even. So they added, like, more features with that. The sparring horde armor in the top. I know when, you know, Bobby, you and I, we did that Eternia special when they first announced it, kind of thing. And we all jumped on that night with Mega J and Skelevator and Collecting Classics Ray, and even Bob from Collector's Power being on there. And we all talked about like the different things and how they showed that thing move. So it was really cool to see, like, we were all speculating, is it automated like the tram, you know, like the tram is, or is it something that like you have to hand do? And it's really neat to just see all the playability with this new one. Not that the old one had a lack of playability, it was still really good, but it's really neat to not only see them, it fits right in with the theme of all of what they've been doing with Origins, taking the original concepts, original designs, and how can we make it better and still make it feel like it's this original thing that you had.
Right. I did appreciate, so just in comparison to the Castle Grayskull they did quite a lot of design tweaks to it. Visually speaking, I appreciate that it seems like as the line goes on, it's less about changing the look and it's more kind of subtle, like, you know, some of this, they're adding some extra capabilities to Eternia, but it pretty much looks like the vintage Eternia. It's not, yeah, you know, you could, if you weren't looking careful, you could be fooled that this is the actual vintage item.
Right.
Yeah, I like the scale of it. I know they mentioned that it was 4 foot by what, 3 feet or something like that, and I could picture it, but it was great to see people standing around it and playing with it because then I realized, man, that thing is big. So I didn't feel as bad spending that much money on it, knowing how big that thing is. It's compared. Were you guys surprised that it made it to 5,000 that fast?
I was.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say I'm a little surprised. Not that I didn't think the demand was there, but all I can remember hearing about that first week was how many people were complaining about the cost of this playset. And at that same time, people were finding these old sales circulars and sales flyers and posting it of Eternia being $89.99 back in like 1987. But the funny thing is that's not how much Mattel launched Eternia at. When it came out, and like you can find direct quotes from Mattel, it was like $140. And if you convert that to today's prices, that's a $450 playset. So with the added engineering, tooling, and extra features, it really makes sense that yes, this playset's going to cost more.
But I think a lot of people didn't understand too. It's like Adam, like in your article, that the tooling cost so much that they had to make so many, but they ended up dialing it back on the product number to like what,
Yeah.
less than 4,000, I believe.
Yeah, they I and I don't know why, it didn't say exactly why they dialed down the production numbers. Maybe it was just because they didn't feel like they could sell that many to retailers because it was such a huge box, to be sitting there. But they, even at the retail price, that they were going to sell them at, they were below break even. So
Right.
I think it was, I forget what it was. Like they had to do 10,000 or more to actually make a profit on it. So regardless of what they sold it at, and the sale price that's in some of those ads, they kind of lost their shirt over it.
Yeah, it definitely helped with that eventual downfall of the Masters of the Universe line because that's a big hit to the bank account. And there were a lot of, again, other factors going into it too. That was just one of many pieces. So, it's really no wonder that they wanted to find a way that if they were going to put up the cost to do all the tooling and make this thing, that they could really find a way to make sure that it wasn't going to be another huge loss. And if we can see everything that they're doing right now with the toy line, and it doesn't look like it's slowing down at all, it's picking up. So if this had not backed and they couldn't recoup any costs if they lost money, how much of this toy line would we still see? I think it was kind of like added into their projection numbers, I'd like to say. Like they had to have this thing succeed so that we could keep seeing all these other projects that they're doing.
Yeah, that's a scary thought. I didn't even think about that. I couldn't imagine if they failed, how much that would hurt the line itself going forward. Yeah, that wasn't even on my mind at the time. That's a good point. Yeah, because I know like when Eternia came out, none of my friends had it. We were all starting to get a little older. I was going into my my 8th grade, about to graduate, in 87. So that's a year prior, but I started 8th grade. And we're all getting a little older, and Masters wasn't into us as much like anything else was at that time. Everything started slowing down, as in cartoon wise and toy wise, by 86 for a little while until Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out. But yeah, it's a weird thing. So with the crowdfunding succeeding, and they made a point to say that they can possibly do more in the future, what do you think they would offer as a crowdfund project, or what would you like to see? That's a two-point question, I guess you can say.
I think crowdfunding, that's a good venue for something that's a little bit more complicated, more expensive. So Eternia was a good sort of item for that. I know Snake Mountain's going to retail, so that's, you know, all the other playsets beyond that that we still have left are smaller, like Fright Zone and Slime Pit. So I think something that was never a playset in the 80s would be great. Something like, I think we talked about before, like Eterno's Palace from the Filmation cartoon would be great. Or there's a lot of playsets that were never produced in the vintage line, but that some of the images have been shared around. Like I know there was a wall mounted playset that Ted Mayer also did, and it was, you know, he had people. It was kind of like I know there was a toy line in the 80s that sort of did this too. There was sort of zip lines that the figures would go down.
Oh, the Skylanders. Is that no? Not Skylanders.
Yeah.
It's Sky something. I know.
Sky Warriors. Is that it?
I have the cartoon, but yeah, it's Sky something. I can't remember.
Yeah, it was a very short-lived line, but there was something like that for that. Or there's, you know, there's like I know Axel Jimenez did a snake warrior.
Lady Slither's palace.
Sorry, I'm coughing a little bit. You guys keep talking.
But yeah, I think Lady Slither's palace, or you know, kind of like, you know, the Snake Men don't get a lot of love for a base. Like every faction had a playset, but the Snake Men, and that's, I think that's kind of because, you know, if you read the mini comics and all like that, you know, Snake Mountain was King Hiss's, you know, that was his palace, and then he got sealed away. So it's nice to think of having something for them to fall back on, you know, something for them to have as their own that's not, you know, Skeletor already took it over. But I think what I might enjoy seeing from a crowdfunding project, you know, because it's, I look at crowdfunding like this thing would never succeed in a retail aisle. Okay, kind of like a dream type project that would just not succeed sitting in stores. So big box things like Eternia is perfect for that. And you'll get people that argue and push back like, well, big doll houses or Barbie dream houses and stuff like that go in those aisles. But they also don't cost $500, you know. Seeing like a more fleshed out Fright Zone. Something a little more on the lines of like what was in Filmation, maybe not that exact huge industrial city looking thing, but you know, flesh out Fright Zone a little bit more, kind of keep it attached, maybe modular a little bit with the Slime Pit, like being able to connect these things. Because I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when it came to getting, you know, Castle Grayskull, there was only one location here in Maryland that was carrying it. It was like one Target and they only had three. And I was checking the apps daily and it would still say like, this is not carried at this Target or this Walmart and, you know, like zero in stock all the time kind of thing. And a lot of them did say they do not carry this. I don't know if that's because they weren't dedicating shelf space to a product of that size or what. I can't speak for that because I'm not working in retail anymore. But just happened to luck out. One had three of them one day and went over and immediately picked it up. But, you know, it seemed like there was a lot of hesitancy to carry such a big product and have it take up so much room if it wasn't going to sell. And this thing was only like $85. So it wasn't really, when you think of like, again, something like Eternia, which is much more, this only being like 80 some dollars, you know, if retailers are already hesitant about putting something like that on a shelf, even smaller play sets, it's like, well, is it really going to sell? Look at how many of, and I got it right back here too. You can kind of see the green head of the snake. How many of those little playsets just were sitting in the aisle from the CGI series and they weren't going anywhere? And again, this thing was only $40. So something like a Fright Zone or something like a Slime Pit may not, to us, it'll sell. You know, it's going to sell like hotcakes because we all had these toys as kids and we want them again. But they've really got to think, is that going to sell? So something Playsets are definitely a good deal when it comes to like crowdfunding projects, I think. But you got to go like they did with Eternia, and you got to give us more with it. You know, if they were to put up Fright Zone as a crowdfund project and they didn't give us more than a hand puppet, a swinging jail cell, and a weeping willow tree that can tie up figures, a little trap. Like, they've got to be able to add more to it. So, like, getting into a real crowdfunding project, it's kind of hard to think about what maybe it would be. Eternos Palace, I think, would be a great thing. And if you were going to do something like that, maybe even bringing in the Crystal Palace from, you know, Princess of Power. I know as a kid, like, honestly, that was my Eternos Palace because it was a little more royal, less rugged, less rough, you know, and my sister's Crystal Palace worked great for me to have King Randor sitting there and, you know, kind of have these more of a royal palace versus this old decrepit castle that's falling apart and holds secrets of the universe in it.
So, how about this? Do you think they would do a crowdfunding, which I think would make sense, is Grandemere with a Darkspoke playset? What would you think about that? I think that would be awesome, my opinion. You have him in with his pit, you know, and everything inside, and the nice doors and everything. That'd be cool.
I'd
That'd be
back it in
cool.
an instant.
Yeah.
You like that's something we never, I mean, we've had Grenimir with classics. Yeah, we got them twice, two color variations. But for something like that, yeah, that would be a great.
Yeah, I would be into
How big do you think that would get scale-wise? Because Grandemere is pretty big in classics. I don't own the classics version, but I've seen people hold it. It's like a big doll almost, you know. So I don't know if they would scale it that same size, because he is, if they're going to keep it kind of close to how the size of the figures are, and he's a lot bigger, I don't know. I'm sure that set would be really huge. It'd probably open up, you know, just like the big ring, you know, the half dome in inside. I think something they can do. They're better at it than I can imagine, but I think that would be really cool. What about like vehicles? Do you think they would do it with vehicles? Because vehicles don't seem to be selling as much or as available anymore as much. I know Adam, you've got the Rotan, and then I went and found it the next day. And then, but I'm hearing a lot of people are having a hard time finding that. And with Stridor being available everywhere and overstocking, you think that they'll go crowdfunding more for vehicles going forward?
Maybe I apologize if my dog is trying to get into the room. So if you hear a scratching, that's my dog. I can, but yeah, I don't know. I do see vehicles kind of sitting a little bit more than figures, depending on the figure, but they could go that way. I would love if they did a crowdfunded vehicle, something like the Gyra Attacker. I don't know if you've heard of that one. That was one that they were going to do in the 87 line, but they didn't actually do it. And probably they'd have to wait and make, you know, if they did Rotar and Twistoid, the Gyra Attacker was meant to kind of launch Rotar. So He-Man would sit in one seat, and then Rotar's in the front. And you can it'll launch him, and he kind of spins out and attacks the evil warriors. Something like that'd be cool.
I think so. And honestly, I kind of feel like I don't want to say that I think vehicles should be crowdfunded because I don't know, that's kind of a bummer, really. I like that they are available in stores. But one thing I've noticed about the line overall is that the first vehicle that we got in the line was the jet sled. And they gave you multiple options on how you could deco it out. You could either have it as the jet sled or the war sled. That was a really cool feature, I thought. And it had a lot of extra tooling compared to the vintage, you know, compared to the original. Everything, like all the control panels and all like that, were sculpted. They added actual handles that they could hold on to. They had the jet engines coming out of the back of it. There was a lot of extra tooling involved in one of the simplest vehicles of all. And then as time's going on here, you know, we got the Wind Raider. Now, the Wind Raider is a bigger scale than the Vintage, which is nice. It does seat the figures a little bit better. They did a little bit of extra tooling again because they added like some handlebars in it, or even the Land Shark, actually. The Land Shark was kind of next before the Wind Raider. But what I'm noticing is there's less tooling and sculpting. Sure, the vehicles all seem to be a little bit larger, but we're not getting like all the panels now are just stickers. As a matter of fact, I've actually had to use some glue on my Wind Raider already because some of the stickers have started to peel already. This is a brand new toy. You know, aside from my son and I playing with them a little bit, it's not really getting used a lot. It just kind of sits on the shelf, and like the stickers are already starting to peel on this thing. I'd like to see if they do go the route of crowdfunding for vehicles, I'd like to see them keep up that initial jet sled style upgrades. Now, I thought it was really cool with Rotan that they added in like those Revell model pieces to it. As a kid, I had the Revell model Talon Fighter. And I got to tell you, I don't remember a lot about it because I remember it broke very quickly. And then I had the Talon Fighter with Point Dread. You know, my parents were gracious enough to actually get me a second thing because, you know, the mentality was you break it, you're not getting another one. Right. And yet I managed to get a Point Dread with the Talon Fighter, you know, after I remember the first one breaking. And it was actually, I think it was because of either something I read off of the Battle Ram blog where I'd forgotten they even had those models. And I remembered as a kid having a red Talon Fighter, like red canopy, not the blue and everything like this. Mm-hmm. I remembered having it and it breaking, and then I had a blue one, and I always thought it was like, well, there's two different kind of Talon Fighters. Like you had Night Stalker and you had, Stridor, you know, like Panther and Cringer. Like I always thought there was this other kind of Talon Fighter, but I could never find anything on it. So, finding years later, like, oh, that's what I must've had is kind of neat to put that piece of the puzzle back together.
And those were interesting because they're not just color wise, but they were shaped, you know, they're shaped a little differently. The Talon, the model kit version is a little more stretched out, which coincides with probably the, you know, sort of the early concept design for it. And I don't know if that means that the Revell got sort of what was the early work, sort of the early visual work, and that's just all they were given to work off of, or if it was intentionally like, let's differentiate a little bit from the actual toys that are coming out. But something like that too, like, you know, a different, like there was earlier versions of the Wind Raider. They had more of like a dragon, like a taller dragon instead of sort of that sleek design on the figurehead on the front. So there are alternate, you know, versions of vehicles they could do too, as, you know, if we're talking a Kickstarter kind of campaign, that's something they could do as well.
Yeah, because like my idea for it would be like the bigger vehicles that weren't made before, maybe like the Collector from Filmation or something, because that was pretty huge. Yeah. That would be something different. I think that'd be more like a crowdfunding, because I don't think that would sell as much in the store as it would be as a crowdfund, probably, if they go that route. You know, we still haven't gotten a few of the vehicles prior. Sure. Now with Eternia coming out, I would almost assume that they're going to come out with the Blaster Hawk. What would you think about that too, right? Since it can attach to that swivel piece.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, that's kind of the next thing. If you've got your Eternia, you need Blaster Hawk. And then you need Fright Fighter just to be flying overhead, the Eternia.
That's right.
There was that old Earl Norum poster that, you know, has Fright Fighter kind of going over Eternia. And, yeah.
Well, it's funny. And then you mentioned like bigger vehicles like that. And again, leaning back into Shira and the Princess of Power a little bit, and I can never remember his name, the pirate who had the ship. Seahawk. Seahawk.
Seahawk.
Or even the ship we just saw in Revelations. like something kind of big like that, kind of dynamic. It's not just a vehicle, it's kind of a playset in and of itself. I'm not saying USS Flag here or anything, but you know, something like that might be really neat to try and put at a Kickstarter, because again, it's a little bit more of that deep cut scenario where it's like, maybe it's not for everybody, but would it be for enough fans to see if we can get this to back?
I think if you went that route with the ship, I think the number would be lower than 5,000. I don't know, to fund it, or maybe it might not. They might actually stick with the same number, but I don't know how many would go into that one. I don't know if I would be into buying a big boat.
I think they were smart with the Eternia playset, because they did bump up the size enough so that it could work if you're an Origins collector, if you just want it for your vintage collection and you can't buy the real thing, or if you're a classics collector, it'll kind of work with all of those.
Yeah.
So they've kind of got all their bases covered there.
Yeah, I thought that was a really smart thing too. And I wanted to bring that up earlier, but we kind of talked past it. But I think that was the right move to appeal to as many, you know, Masters Universe fans across the board. You know, we had already had a King Grayskull. They had Hero coming in Masterverse. So, like, you know, again, with Revelations having shown off for Eternia, and now the Eternia playset can scale with these guys, like, you can kind of recreate those kinds of scenes from the cartoon, which, is, again, is great for toy photography, because although it's not the best scale, it's still usable. It's still workable.
And it does tie into what they're doing for next year too, with the Snake Man, because of the Snake Tower. You know, King Hiss used that a lot in the mini comic and stuff like that. So, well, yeah, we're getting into that a little bit later, but
yeah, they could, you know, and you know, speaking of Masterverse, you know, or the Revelation TV show, they could also, you know. So if for fans who are using it with their Masterverse figures, you know, bring out Wundar, bring out Vikor, you know, any of those sort of dead heroes who appeared in the Eternian afterlife.
Yes, yeah. I think that would be great. Or I always forget her name. That
Shirella.
Oh, like, was it Vina or Shirella? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, Shirella was more that warrior that was kind of like fighting alongside like the heroes in Preternia. That
hero, and yeah, with the giants, yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking that that like very primitive sorceress.
Oh, from the Revelation.
Yeah. I can't think of her name because this isn't the first time she's been introduced.
Oh,
but yeah. You know, her
she character. She kind of had a 2000X look to her, right?
Yeah, a little bit more 2000X style, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to dig into the book. I know it's in the books, but I can't remember her name offhand. She's very, very deep cut.
Again, yeah, one of those style characters. But, like, you know, just opening the door for a little bit more fleshing out the universe. And, again, seeing some more things that were concepts of the vintage that they were never able to make. And getting them actually out now. I mean, actually, Menez teases us nonstop on these, on the covers, you know, all the card arts and everything like that. And it drives you wild because you never know what's really going to come out or what's just going to remain a tease. You know,
so far, they've been pretty good with bringing everything out.
They have been. But we still
finally got Moss Man.
Yeah, finally. But there's things like the Storm Raider, as I think he called it, you know, that alternate Wind Raider. There is concept that was kind of like that catapult vehicle.
Battle catapult, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, stuff like that. It's teased on the box, but will we ever see it? You know, you never know. Because again,
I would love to see that.
I don't think anybody ever thought we'd see Frogmonger as an actual figure.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love seeing that. That's what I like to see is stuff like that. It's cool stuff.
I think it's so wonderful that we get that. And the fact that they intentionally left him off the sticker for the Castle Grayskull this time around. You know, it's like,
oh, did they? I never opened it. I'd never looked at it. I got it in the box.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you look up the new updated sticker that they have, it's more complete. Cause you remember how like the part of the door, the part of the jaw bridge always cut off that one portion of the sticker from the way the mechanism worked. They reworked the sticker. So it's a little bit smaller and it sits in there better now. It's got that completed section, but Frogmonger is not in there. And then Axel started teasing him all over a couple of different boxes. And it really kind of helped draw this hype. There was a lot of people that didn't even know who he was or what he was. And it's like, you know, again, he was this part of a sticker.
Yeah, Adam was a champion with that on Twitter. You always post, oh, this is where I get it. This is what it is. This is what it is. That was great.
Yeah, I was doing the same thing across Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, I love all of those early stickers on the Castle Grayskull, on the Battle Ram. I love that art. Like, I want to see too. Like, you know, the back of the Battle Ram, they have the sort of that mask sticker. Like, there's.
Yes.
I would love to like if they do a full Battle Ram, I want to see a character with that face as the driver for it. That'd be great.
That would be awesome. I'd really like to see it. I always felt like there was that one kind of robotic character in New Adventures.
If you guys Artilla? Artilla?
Yeah.
He had like that launching face kind of gimmick.
Yep. That's Artilla.
That always reminded me of that like face on the Battle Ram. So seeing something like that come out would be really, really awesome. I mean, we also got the suit of armor from Grayskull too. You know, like they've really gone out of their way to bring, they've been listening for 40 years as we've all cried out as fans, like, why have we never gotten this? Or why have we never gotten this? And they've listened and they're kind of putting it into practice, which is really great. Like if you think of fan service, Mattel knows first off, all their fans of this brand, we're all in those middle-aged kind of years. We're all a little bit more established than, you know, as older adults. And they know we've got the money to shell out for products we really want. They're just trying to figure out where the right, where that golden little nugget is. Like, where's the right price with the right stuff that this is going to sell?
We might have the money, but we still spend it anyway.
If we keep spending it on Eternia, though.
Right, yeah. You'll have to live in Eternia eventually.
Exactly.
Well, you know, if I could buy three or four of them, I'll go place them around the backyard now, and I'll put a tarp over it, and, you know, I'll just start with that. Castle Grayskull on one end when I get my Snake Mountain on the other end, and then Eternia Towers all the way around. Yeah, I'll get there.
Okay. Yeah, because you were talking about the teases and everything. They sent out, it was Juarez, and Axel, and they put out that Eternia box art, and they sent out two sketches, you know, and they teased one had some stuff on it, and the other had the other things, you know, and it was the laser light characters, you know, He-Man and Skeletor, they were teased on there, and then one of the art had Mantisaur on there, but he was taken off on the other one, so they're doing that stuff on purpose. They wouldn't just send out sketches like that to just say, hey, this is what it's going to look like. They're getting people excited about what we could possibly get forward, you know.
That's right.
I'm super, super enthused. I hope they do laser light Skeletor, laser power He-Man soon. I love those guys.
I wish I don't have those as a vintage action figures. I don't own those.
They're tough to get.
But to me, they're not that important because I was never able to get it when I was a kid. So it's not that important now to be able to get it because I never knew they existed back then. So it wasn't a thing. But yeah.
Well, one thing I always appreciated about those toys, to me, they were kind of the bridge between vintage to new adventures. Mm-hmm. the head sculpt on He-Man looks a little bit more like the head sculpt on the New Adventures toys. The Skeletor, he looks a little bit more like how Skeletor looks in New Adventures. So maybe that might be something we see down the line if they start switching up and adding more of those to the toy line. And we know the door's open for that because we've already seen them do, I mean, you know, 2000X He-Man, 2000X Evil-Lyn, 2000X Skeletor. Like, we're getting those.
We got the animated New Adventures He-Man, too, with the four-pack, too.
Yeah, so. So, like, you know, they're... It really feels like they're testing waters all the way around to see what's really going to push and what's not.
And what I noticed that Mattel has been, or Masters official Twitter account does, and I believe they do it on IG as well, is they sent out like photo of Flog, and they said, hey, you know, what do you think of it? I don't know what the tweet was. I can't remember what he said, but they showed him. And then they asked, what would you use? Would you use the scuba attack or the... what do you call it? Those walkers that I can't remember.
Stiltstalkers.
Yeah, the Stiltstalkers.
And then they also teased, I think it was Castaspella recently.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're doing that on purpose to, you know, say, hey, this is coming in the future, or they're just, because they don't usually do that stuff. And it's, to me, it's a little odd. But it would be neat to get New Adventures characters into Origins as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'd love to see. I want them to go for as long and as deep as they can with, you know, the toys. Like, I went 30-some years without really having He-Man around in my life in a certain way. And just seeing that original, even though the head sculpt was off, but seeing that He-Man and Skeletor back in package again 2 years ago, it brought so much emotion back from an early childhood that I've realized, like, I'd like to just be in a world where, you know, He-Man's always going to be around in some way.
Yeah, I'm hoping. You know? Yeah, I'm hoping. Yeah, it was gone for a long time besides classics, but
yeah,
a lot of people couldn't get into classics either. So
that's right.
And without it being in retail, like, for somebody like me, like I said, I missed out on classics because I didn't realize.
You had to be online at certain parts of the internet to really even know that was out there.
Yeah. You know, and again, by the time I finally found out about it, it was so late in the game and everything was so much that I'm glad I was on top of it. You know, a buddy of mine worked at Walmart with Origins, and he saw those figures, and just recently he and I had been talking about it, and he realized how much I liked them, and he sent me this picture of them, and I was just like, oh wow, that's fantastic. And then I started looking into it, and I realized, oh, this is like a thing. Like, this isn't just like those re-releases from the early 2000s, you know, for the 20th anniversary. Like, they're doing this, they're gearing it up again, and, you know, having kept up with it ever since. And it's like, yeah, they are really not just like gearing up for the 40th anniversary and then we're going to shut everything down. Like, they've got fully planned out production for over a year. You know, I think it's great, and I hope it keeps going. And, you know, as being a dad now and being able to pass this down to my son, he's getting all into Masters of the Universe now. Whereas a few years ago, I'd shown him the cartoons and he was talking about the toys. And again, this is before Origins. I'd mentioned like that he used to have toys of these. And he had said that, you know, yeah, Dad, I think it'd be really cool if I had some He-Man toys. And I started looking at the prices online. I said, yeah, Daddy does too, buddy. So now it's really nice that just a few years later, hey, we do have He-Man toys again. Yeah. This is great.
Yeah. How old is he? What?
He's seven.
Seven. Yeah. Okay. That's a good age for that. Yeah.
It's really good. Well, like, he's been watching some of my videos on YouTube now and seeing the shows and stuff like that I do. And So he called me up a couple weeks ago saying that, Dad, I want to be a toy collector. And then he started talking to me about the lines that he has to finish and complete. So I have a 7-year-old telling me about the lines he has to complete. He has no job. This is not coming out of his pocket. This is coming out of, like, my pocket, his mother's pocket. Like, I'm glad he thinks this way, but we're going to have to work on something here for you to complete your collections, okay?
I mean, as a kid, though, did you think that way? Like, you had the complete collections like you do now? You know what I mean? So say you're getting Origins, you in your mind, you got to get every single Origins that comes out. Did you think that way as a kid?
When I was his age, actually, yes. Because by the time I was his age, Master of the Universe was over. And, you know, because that came out, I'm the youngest one of us here probably, because I'm always the youngest one of us when we do these shows. So, you know, for me, He-Man was a constant from, like, the time I was born all the way through most of my early childhood. But I was also a big fan of Star Wars, and Star Wars was gone by the time I was playing with a lot of toys. I have no idea how my dad decided I was going to start having He-Man, whether he saw it and thought it looked cool and said, these are going to be the awesome toys my son plays with, or... You know, Star Wars was a little smaller. The weapons and stuff were a little smaller. So it would have been more of a choking hazard for me to play with those than, again, to play with, like, He-Man, where they were bigger. But I wore out my Star Wars VHS tapes, but I never had toys. Picked up a couple here and there at yard sales because everybody was just selling and getting rid of them. There wasn't the popular hype that there was just 20 years later on those. It was all very get rid of these. So I had a couple, but they were never complete. Like, Luke Skywalker never had his lightsaber. So when Power of the Force came out in the early 90s, Power of the Force 2, when they were gearing up with the special editions, that year when I saw that in the JCPenney's toy catalog, and this was at a time when I was getting out of toys, but they were launching these Star Wars toys again. I just held the book up to my mom and I said, I don't care whatever else you try to get me for Christmas. I need these. And I'll never forget the original line. It was a Stormtrooper, Darth Vader, R2-D2, and C-3PO, Luke, Obi-Wan, and Chewie and Han, and the Land Speeder. That was it. That was all they released for that first wave. And sure enough, by my birthday, I had everything. And I tried to stay on top of it as it went, you know, like as they were releasing more figures that were coming out, you know, if there was a holiday coming up, I would talk with, you know, my mom into like trying to pick me up what she could, or, you know, Kmart was around at the time still and they had layaway. So I was like, Mom, you should get this for me for Christmas and we'll just put it on layaway. So you don't have to buy it all now. You just put it on the layaway and we'll keep paying it off. And then when Christmas comes, I'll have all this stuff. And then I would talk her into giving it to me before Christmas or whatever. But I was obsessed and I wanted all of it. I really did. That was the, you know, I did an episode a few weeks ago talking about when did you go from being a playing with toys to collecting toys. And I think that line did it because there was just this deficit of Star Wars. And I was such a big fan that when it finally did come out, I had to have all of it.
Did you feel that way, Adam, when you were young, that you had to have everything or?
No, I definitely would gravitate towards things. I would see, you know, cross-sell art or whatever, you know, oh, I like this guy, I like that guy. I didn't feel like I had to have everything. It was just more about, if I liked the look of the character, then I wanted the toy. And I guess I've always kind of been like that. I don't have everything of any line currently. If it speaks to me, or a lot of it's like, you know, if it's a certain, you know, I really like these early waves of toys, but I don't have to have, you know, like if I, when I was doing Motu Classics, I didn't have to do Princess of Power, or, you know, I would just kind of focus on certain areas. that's, I don't know, I guess I've always been a cherry picker. I like what I like, and I kind of gravitate towards that. What about you?
Yeah, I when I was a kid, I'm a checklist type of person. You know, I always make lists and stuff, and I like to cross it off when I get something. So when I looked at like the mini comics, I would circle the characters I had, you know, or the ones I need, and then I'd cross them off, you know, when I got them, put a big X over them. Or I'd do that with the cross-sell art. I used to do that all the time with Star Wars, the Kenner figures, because they would always have all the figures on the rear card, and they list all the names at the bottom, and I just cross off all their names. I need this, need this. But I didn't get a lot of figures when I was a kid besides Star Wars, because my grandmother bought me a lot of Star Wars. But when Masters and stuff came, I was 10, or 9 going on 10. And I didn't get a lot of toys back then because we had economic problems with my dad losing his job and all that stuff. So yeah. I was only able to get stuff during Christmas or birthdays. So I was able to get just what I really wanted, and I couldn't get them all. But we had friends around the neighborhood. I had about like 7-8 friends on my block alone, and we all shared our toys. It was almost like a toy community in a way. You know, everybody had certain characters. We pretty much had a complete collection. Especially the kid across the street, he was spoiled, so he had everything, you know.
Yeah.
I had Castle Grayskull. That was my one place of it. I always got like one big thing for Christmas, and then I got the smaller stuff. So it was either like the playset, and then, you know, characters, or a vehicle, and then some characters, you know. But that was very, you know, twice a year, so it didn't last too long. But yeah, that was how I collected back then. I wanted the whole lines, but I knew I couldn't get them. But it was always a dream to get them. I think that's why I am now the way I am. I want everything because I didn't have it all as a kid. So in my mind, I'm constantly feeding that little child of mine that I had myself, you know. It's like, I couldn't get this back then. I'm getting it now, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's harder to go over to your buddy's house and play toys, right? You can't do that now.
No. Yeah, I don't even know where he lives anymore. So I haven't spoken to him since I was, 14. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing about it is too, like, you know, with this, I mean, I don't know about you guys. Again, I stuck into toy collecting a little bit long, or, you know, buying toys as a young child and into an older child, into a teenager. But it was like shunned, you know, like my friends that came over to my house know that I did it, but it wasn't like I would go out and talk about it with people. I didn't, you know, because it wasn't the cool thing or whatever. So I kind of like shunned myself away, and it kept me from collecting toys at various times in my life too, because, like, again, becoming a young adult and you've got responsibilities, but you want to go buy, like, I'd always walk down the toy aisle and be like, man, they got some really cool looking toys now. It would be neat to get this. It'd be neat to get this. And every once in a while I would, but not much. And again, with Star Wars, it was like right around the time Revenge of the Sith came out or Attack of the Clones came out, and they were coming out with some really cool figures. Two of my friends that I was hanging out with the most at the time were also big into Star Wars, and they used to go on to toy hunts and stuff like that, like driving around in the middle of the night trying to find who's got what, you know, hitting all these 24-hour Walmarts or whatever, trying to see if we can get these figures, and then like popping into the random 24-hour Rite Aid, because nobody shops for toys at Rite Aid and you pay a little bit more, but they normally got the rare figures you wouldn't find at a Walmart or Target or Toys R Us, because all the toy guys go there. So like keeping it under wraps. But now, you know, it's funny you mentioned you can't just go down the street and play with your buddy's toys, because look at us here on the show. I'm East Coast, you're Central, Bobby's in Mountain, and we all love this stuff, and we'd have fun playing with them together, but it's a little hard when we live this scattered throughout the United States. But we have our community where we can talk about this and be excited with each other and be passionate with one another. We just can't, unfortunately, all get together and play with our toys at the sandbox anymore, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I remember when Phantom Menace came out, and I ended up buying one of those pod racers. And I was standing in line, and I got up to the cash register, and this little young girl was, she's like, "Who are you? Oh, your son's going to like this." I was like, "No, I'm buying it for me." And she looked up to me, and she's like, sad. That's what she said. And I looked at her like, you know.
You got shunned by a kid.
I know. That's what, 19, when did that come out? That was like 1999?
Yeah, 99 into 2000.
Yeah, so I was, what, 20, 26, I think, at the time? So, yeah.
Somebody told me that recently at Target. Oh, your son's going to love this. I was like, I just went with it. Like, yeah, oh, yeah, he'll totally love this.
That was part of the fun for me having my son, was that I could go toy shopping again. And for once, people would not look at me weird being this grown man, because I got my son right here with me. They didn't have to know that this was daddy's toy and not his.
Well, I think nowadays, though, it is more accepted, because when I go, and I don't go often to the stores looking for toys, but when I do, it's you always see more adults in the aisles, you know, looking through the figures than you see kids. I see a lot of kids as well, but there's a lot of adults that are there doing it. And I wish we had Toys R Us again, because I used to see that all the time.
Well, yep. It really depends, I think, on the age range of who's around, too. You know, like, you know, we're all into that middle age range right now, you know, between late 30s, you know, going through the 40s. And people, the generation that's older than us, still look at us like, why are you guys buying toys? Meanwhile, the younger kids, they're all looking at video games and everything else, and they're not even paying attention to the toys. You know, they want the screen time. And it's like, well, then who are they really making these toys for anyway?
Well, they know they're making it for us. They're hoping, I was hoping kids would get them.
They know they got us.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, we're the ones with the money. And, you know, especially us with young, you guys got young kids. So it's, I don't know how old you're, you got a daughter, I believe, Adam, but my son's older now. But when 2000X came out, my son was born. And, but he started getting into toys a few years later after that. But so He-Man was gone by then again. But it's,
I have a son, so he's actually how I got back into He-Man as a grown-up, because he was interested. He liked this show called Lunar Jim. It was on Netflix for a while. It was like a British animated show. So I was on eBay trying to find these toys that weren't available here, and so I was like, oh, you know, when I was a kid, I used to really love He-Man, and so then I bought a few He-Man toys, and then he and I started playing with those as well. So we had a lot of fun from like when he was probably 3 or 4 up to 7 or 8. We would play He-Man all the time. We'd, you know, bring out Castle Grayskull and Snake Mountain and just have a blast.
Yeah, because I would watch the reruns of the cartoons, because I had them on DVD, and I still do. But I'd play the Filmation cartoon for him, and I'll never forget this, because when you hear the when you see the Filmation logo go across and you hear the ding at the end, I would touch his nose, and he would love that. I mean, he was real small. He was like 1, maybe 2 years old, 3 years old. So then after we kept watching it, he would like lean over and touch my nose at the ding. So it ended up, I always remember that. So that's like a fantastic story for me and him to have. You know, we always talk about it when I want to talk about Masters, because he knows I love it. So he'll always remember every time one time I caught him, I was watching it, and he was walking by getting something to eat. And I saw him touch his own nose. I got you. I love that.
Because here we are again talking about how we're passing this love, this passion for this brand down to this younger generation. And guys, we're getting older. This is the 40th anniversary of He-Man. Who knows if we're going to be seeing an 80th anniversary resurgence?
I won't. But,
well, you know, but if we keep it alive and we keep it passed down to the younger generation, there's that much more of a chance that there will be. And even like you said, Bobby, if you're not around, if I'm not around by that time, my son will be. And hopefully he'll be remembering, you know what? My dad was a pretty cool dude with these He-Man toys. At least that's what I hope. Otherwise, be like, you know, my dad was a real loser with these He-Man toys.
Why did he waste his money on all this junk? No, I'm kidding. No, my son, yeah, he's waiting for them. I got them all saved for him. He'll have them after I'm gone. He knows that already. And he doesn't want me to go, but he'll have them. So that's a good thing. I mean, hopefully he can pass them down. I hope he doesn't sell them. I hope he hands them down, like you said. It'd be neat.
Yeah, just keep passing that torch, man. You know, keep it going to the younger generations. And, you know, hopefully He-Man will be around for long after we're gone.
Yeah, because I know the Eternia is coming out in a year and a half, so that's 2024. I know they mentioned the Snake Men is for next year. What else do you think is going to be happening next year? Besides Snake Mountain, of course, that's coming out around Christmas time.
It's a tough call to say. I mean, we've already got, they said that the Rise of the Snake Men was supposed to be Q1, and they're already out. Bobby,
they're sitting right over there in the box. Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, unless they got a time machine, Q1's still a couple of months away. So they've already popped the cork on that. I guess they wanted something in stores, new on shelves before Christmas, maybe. But we know, like, the stuff they were showing off towards the back end of this year was really thought to be going into next year. And then right around Q1, we get Toy Fair and everything like that. So then announcements for the rest of the year. But we've already had the Horde come out. We've had that. Now we have the Snake Men coming out. We've already started to see pictures of Tongue Lashor, who, you know, he was on the back end of that diorama of Eternia. And now we're actually seeing the final sculpted version. And I called it. It's the same body they're using for Frogmonger. I knew it. Same sculpts. Yep. So.
Removable, like, tongue.
Yeah. That's one thing I'm feeling a little gypped about. All the, you know, I like all the gimmicks, I do, and the modularity's cool, but now it's like we're just getting more modularity and less of the actual gimmicks, and that kind of, it's a give and take. But so what do we got left after that with the Snake Men? You know, we got King Hiss still coming down the line. You've got Snake Face, Blast Attack,
Squeeze,
yeah. So there's not a whole lot of Snake Men left unless they start getting into game more of the deep cuts of Classic.
They could do like Snake Warrior and Army Builders like they did in Classics, I suppose.
I wish they would do Army Builders in 2-packs, though. Like, the Horde Trooper should have been a 2-pack. Yeah. The Eternian Guard was kind of a 2-pack, not quite, but it should have been a 2-pack. So if they're going to keep going that route, I really hope they start doing those 2-packs of them. Yeah, I mean, and it's not like they're shy. We've got a 3-pack of Sunman in stores right now. We've had a 2-pack for the Rise of Evil. Just keep that going. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think, like, beyond the Snake Men? Do you think they're going to do anything special? Because, I mean, it's going to be the Filmation 40th anniversary next year.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll celebrate that. I know we still got basically the 85 wave of Evil and Heroic Warriors. The 86 wave we don't have much of. There's the 87 movie figures. We don't have any of those. That could be something that I'm sure they'll roll that out in the next couple of years.
Well, especially if we're getting the Masterverse versions of He-Man and Skeletor, maybe we might be able to see like a Commander Karg or I really hope we get a Blade. He was a really cool toy.
He was part of the vintage, Blade. So I'm almost positive we'll probably get him since he's part of the vintage.
His buck's the basic buck, really, with a couple of different forearms and all like that, but mostly you know, they have a lot of the parts, some boots, forearms, and a new head sculpt.
So now that we're getting towards the end here, and it's Thanksgiving time, you guys got any messages you want to say for Thanksgiving or anything like that?
I'm grateful to be, you know, a part of the fan community. I've been obsessed with He-Man for like the last 10 years since I kind of got into it again as an adult. It's been great connecting with guys like you who are passionate about it. It's been great, you know, just seeing the fan community evolve. So yeah, I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that it's still going, that we're not, you know, we've got several lines out, we've got more seasons of cartoons, potentially a movie. That's, you know, we'll see if that comes to pass. That's been in development for years, but
fingers crossed we're closer than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a lot to be happy about if you're a Masters fan.
What about you, Oz?
I got to say, very similar to that, like, I am so thankful that He-Man has come back into my life, especially at such a pivotal part in my life right now. It's bringing me a lot of joy back into my life that just wasn't there for a very long time. And it rings with me on such an emotional level. And it's great to be able to sit here and talk with fellow fans, fellow collectors who are just as passionate about this brand as I am, you know, because there's a thousand things we could all be sitting here talking about that's going on right now, but we get to talk about He-Man and the impact he's made on our lives and the fact that he still has a presence. And I think that really says something, you know, because it's not just me. I'm not the only one that had He-Man impact my life in a way that 40 years later, I'm still excited about He-Man. You know, we're all here because of that shared thing. I'm so thankful that I get this opportunity to do this with you guys.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm not thankful for nothing, so I'll end right there. No, I'm kidding. I agree. I'm thankful that Masters of the Universe toy lines are still going on right now. This, you know, that wasn't something I thought 10 years ago prior to, or even prior, I shouldn't say 10 years, it's been 12 years, but before Classics came out, it wasn't really a thing as much. And meeting people this past year since being on Twitter and doing a couple shows here, it's been fantastic meeting everybody. I never thought I would be talking face to face with Adam. You know, I've read his website before a long time, and now I'm talking with him on shows. It's great. You know, I'm meeting you, Oz, and Skelevator, and Ray, and Mega J, and everybody else out there that we've been speaking with. It's been really fun to talk about this passion that we have for this toy line. And since it's means so much to us, it's great to share that with people. And just meeting friends all over the world and talking with them about it, it's great. And yeah, I'm looking forward to our future episodes as well. And yeah, that's about what I have to say for that. It's just it's a great feeling to have, you know, and it's great to be accepted too from everybody, you know. So it's a fun time. But I want to say thanks for everybody for watching today or listening on any podcast app that you're listening on this with. If you get a chance, go check out Adam on his website. It's in the link below. It's battleramblog.com. He's on Twitter as well as Instagram. And we got Ostradamus Toys. He's on Instagram and Twitter as well. And I'll have a link to his show as well for YouTube. And we're also on Toy Frenzy every Thursday. And as I forgot, you're on Mondays, right? Or Saturdays. I'm
Saturdays.
Sorry.
Yes. Saturday nights.
Saturday nights. And then Toy Frenzy's on Thursdays. But yeah, we look forward to bringing more episodes to you. This will be once a month. And it'll be on the third Monday of every month. And I want to say it's been a joy with you guys tonight. And I look forward to the next one. If you guys want to say any closing words, you're more than welcome to.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this has been a lot of fun. Adam, again, like Bobby, it's a pleasure meeting you. I've used your website as a resource for years, like ages. Like, you know, I do research for Toy Frenzy Show. So it's really neat to get to spend this time with you and just talk about He-Man, you know, again, going to your website as a resource for so many years. Now it's like, holy cow, I'm talking to this guy. He's on the show with me. This is great. And we're going to be doing this once a month now. So yeah, thank you guys for having me on with this. This is great. And I'm really looking forward to the next one.
Yeah. Thank you, Oz. It's a pleasure meeting you. I look forward to, you know, chatting again in a month. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for the kind words. I checked out one of your podcasts recently. It was great. So I look forward to checking out more of those. It's been fun, and we'll see where it takes us next episode.
Beautiful. Yeah, everyone, we got links in our description, so you can check everything out there. And YouTube, do the YouTube thing, like, subscribe, share, tell people about the podcast. We're new, so the more you share, the more word gets around, and we really do appreciate that. But until next time, I'll see you guys later.
Take care, everybody.